Are you ready for a whole new way of being in the world? Welcome to Living from the Inside Out with Michael Neal.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you may be. Our topic for today is the science of life and the art of living. And the numbers to call to get coaching on how to create more of what you want to see in your life and thriving and all that sort of good stuff. 866-254-1579. Toll free in the United States and Canada. That's 866-254-1579. Outside of the U.S. and Canada, you can dial your country code, usually 001, which is kind of my country code, I think, 760-918-4300. And I will, as always, set the table before I get going. I just want to mention a couple of things. We just did a deal this morning for the Greek language edition of the Inside Out Revolution. Go Greece. And we also this week celebrated the release of the Spanish language edition of Inside Out Revolution. And coming up later this year, we will have the releases of the French language and Taiwanese editions of the Inside Out Revolution. So if you know people in those countries and you want to share the book with them, you will be able to, which is kind of cool. So what are we talking about today? Well, one of the things that I think causes a lot of misunderstanding and confusion in this conversation that you and I have each week about the nature of life, the nature of thought, the nature of mind, the nature of God, the nature of love, the nature of humans, is that we get a little bit muddled up about what I call the science of life and the art of living. And let me say what I mean by science and art. Science is verifiable. It is impersonal. It is the study of truth. Now, most science is the study of truth. For example, if we study truth, what is true, how things work in the physical world, we call that the, you know, life sciences or physical science or physics. If we study it in the chemical world, it's chemistry. If we study it in the world of I guess, you know, there's what we call the soft sciences around behavior and things like that. But essentially what we're looking for is, what are the fundamental principles of the universe? That's all. That's all science is. It's just a search for the fundamental underlying principles of the entire universe. Well, there is a science to life, to being human. There is a science to the invisible. In other words, there is truth. There are underlying principles behind human beings, both our psychology and our spirituality. And so when I talk about, when you hear people talk about principles, we're talking about that which is true, has always been true, would be no more true when you find out about it than it was before you knew about it, would be no less true if you didn't believe it or if you argued against it than it would be if you did believe it and argued for it. Art is an individual expression of the divine. Art is unique every time. Art, your art, your artistry, that is unique to you. And other people can like it or not like it. They can judge it however they want. But ultimately, how you live your life is yours. No one here on Hay House Radio, no one out there in the world, no guru, no teacher can tell you how to live. I mean, they do. but can know more than you about how to live, because living is an art. So all they can say is, hey, I would do it this way. I think you should be more like me. But it's completely subjective. It's little t truth. Well, my truth. This is my truth. I'm living my truth. Well, good. But you live your truth. I'll live my truth. And beyond all ideas of right and wrong, as the poet Rumi said, there is a field. And I'll meet you there. And that field is the field of capital T truth. That field is the science of life, the science of the mind. the science of who and what we really are. And we do really well when we're ruthless about the science and completely flexible about the art. When we really search for impersonal truth about life, but don't try to objectify our own experience and make everybody's experience like ours or make our experience wrong in relation to someone else's. I may like your art more than mine, but it's your art, not mine. But the thing about science is it doesn't matter if you like it. It's just how it is. So we'll go more into some of the distinctions about, well, what is the science of life and what makes up the art of living? But for now, let's go to the phones. Numbers to call, 866-254-1579, toll-free in the U.S. and Canada. Outside of the U.S. and Canada, 001-760-918-4300. And we're going to begin in Alaska with Amy. Amy, welcome to the show. What are we going to talk about today?
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call. I'm pretty excited about this, but I've been having a hard time finding an apartment. I'm 47 years old, and been raising, you know, I had kids, you know, 28 years ago, and we moved regularly, and I never had a hard time finding an apartment. And my last one I was in for 7 years, and finished raising my kids and decided to move in with my boyfriend, thinking that that was the last thing that I needed to do to make our relationship work. And it turned out not to work. And after leaving my place of 7 years, which I absolutely loved and still feel every day like I just want to go back home, I'm unable to find one. And I'm essentially homeless. I do have a place to stay, but I have the money to get my own place, and it's just not happening for me. And I don't know what I'm doing wrong or what I should be doing differently, because I've never faced this. And I feel like there's a lesson to be learned, but I am lost. I don't know what it is.
Okay. So permission to say some things that might make me sound like a jerk, but probably will make sense in the end.
Okay.
Yeah. Would that be okay?
Yes.
Okay, great. When you describe that situation that you just described, when you use the word homeless, does that like fill you with joy and peace?
No.
Right. Yeah. No, it didn't sound like it did. I could for some people. I mean, you know, it's like I'm homeless, like it's a big adventure, but it didn't sound like that's what that word does for you.
I'm trying to make it an adventure. I mean, I have an amazing place to stay. I'm staying in a motorhome. I've got a great view. I like it there. And I tried to become present and happy where I am. And I feel like I am, but it does still make me nauseous.
Well, see, here's the thing, Amy. Here's what I know. So I'll go to our theme today about science and art. So here's what I know about how experience is created. What makes you feel nauseous is not your situation. It's the energy of thought taking form. Right? We're not made to feel life in that sense. We feel thought. That's how the nervous system works. We think, and that thought is sort of brought to life by consciousness, and then we feel it in our senses. We feel it in our bodies.
Yes.
So while I'm the last person in the world to take on the role of word police or thought police, if you're kind of having a nauseating experience right now, the solution to that is not in finding an apartment. The solution to that is in noticing, seeing through, letting go of all of these are just different words for the same thing. The thought that you're feeling. Now, it's not a particular thought. It's not just the thought that I'm homeless, or, you know, it's a whole constellation of thinking.
Well, yeah, there's also the fear. I mean, it took me a while to accept the invite of my friends to come up there. There's that fear that I'm going to overstep my boundaries, or that I'm going to wear out my welcome, that I might interfere with.
Right. So can you see that that fear is also made of thought?
Yes.
In fact, you just listed some of the thoughts that make up that fear.
Yes.
So here's the cool thing about thought, is when you let go of one thought, another one comes. So it's different than trying to make it an adventure or convince yourself that it's fun. Or, in other words, we don't have to create better thinking. When we move beyond, let go of, give up on crappy thinking, nauseating thinking, scary thinking, new thought comes to mind. That's just how the mind works. It's true for everyone, right? It's true in business, where people get stuck on a problem and then they give up, and then suddenly they get fresh ideas, right?
Okay.
It's just how the mind works. Nothing to do with Amy, nothing to do with Michael, right? You give me any human being and that will be true.
Okay.
Now, here's what's kind of cool. While all that thinking's going on and changing and evolving and swapping out and, you know, different thoughts come to mind and different feelings and all that, your essential well-being, your essential nature, your inner peace, it's always there. Like, it can't go anywhere. You can't be more capable of peace in one environment than another. You might have more of an experience of it. But it would be like saying, yeah, my heart doesn't beat right in this apartment, but it used to beat really right in the old apartment.
Yeah.
Now, I get that it feels that way. Don't mishear me. I'm not disavowing the experience of it. But we both kind of know, well, that can't be true.
Yeah. I'm still not understanding it. So it's just trying to come to peace with it.
Well, let me try again. Would that be okay? Try just a different way. Same thing, but just coming at it from a different way. So there are two different things going on that in your head, it sounds to me, that in your head feel like one big thing. So in your head, you know, I'm this age and I've done this and I'm homeless and I can't find a place and I had a place and I thought I had a guy and, you know, that's all one big problem that you're trying to solve by finding the right apartment.
Yeah.
Now, what I hear is a bunch of different things going on simultaneously. One is, you want to find a place to live long term.
Yes.
Right? One is, you have a sort of a very common culturally misunderstanding of where your feelings come from. And so it looks to you like the fear that you're feeling, the nausea that you're feeling, the discouragement that you're feeling, all the different things that you're feeling are to do with your situation. What I'm pointing to is they're 100% made of thought in the moment.
Okay.
The third thing, because there are three, right? The third thing is your sense of home is not in an apartment. It's not in a state. It's a state of mind. It's not in Alaska. It's in you. Which is why there will be times, if you look back through your life, where you felt really at home in a place you'd never been before, and other times where you were a place you'd been 1,000 times and you felt restless. You didn't feel settled. You didn't feel at home. Is that true?
Yes.
Yeah. So you're looking for home. You're looking to get a deeper understanding of thought, and you're looking for a place to live, right? Three different jobs. Each one of them lends itself to a very particular approach, right? So looking for home is all about silence. It's all about quiet. It's all about settling down. Like, not settling down in the, you know, marriage and kids kind of sense. Settling down in yourself. Because home is, you know the expression, home is where the heart is. Well, home is where you are. Home is where literally the physical heart is. Home is you. We are always already home. That's the kind of the ultimate message that underlies every spiritual tradition I've ever come across in the world. So home, you'll find yourself at home every time you really settle down. Every time you get a little bit underneath the noise, a little bit quiet, you'll be home. So that's one thing. The thought feeling connection, it's something. Have you read Inside Out Revolution?
No.
Okay, so if you hang on when we're done, I'll ask the gang at the studio to send you out a copy. Okay. Because that will probably do a better job than I can do in sort of 3 to 5 minutes on the air with that one.
Absolutely.
Okay. Now here's the third one, the one that you came in, you know, you kind of led with, which is, well, I need a place to live long term.
Mm-hmm.
When you're feeling at home in yourself and you're not preoccupied with all your scary, nauseating thoughts, it's not that hard to search for an apartment. See, finding an apartment that will make you feel at home and will resolve your fear and nausea, that's hard. Finding an apartment when you've got the money to find an apartment is just a thing.
I see.
Now, is there anything in there? Because I get that if you're not familiar with this, that's a lot of sideways ideas. But is there anything in there that you particularly kind of get?
Well, I'm familiar with all of it, and I feel like I've done all of that. And it's still there, and I am taking all the actions that I know of. I know I need to add yoga and meditation, but my schedule just hasn't allowed it at this point. And
I'm going to jump in. Why do you think you need to add yoga and meditation? Do you think that's how you're going to find home?
Well, for more relaxation. I do have a lot of other things going on in my life that are causing me a tremendous amount of anxiety. And I don't know if I'm just like focusing on...
So let me be the crazy guy on the radio, and then you can dismiss me as the crazy guy on the radio or not. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say that none of the stress and pressure that you're feeling comes from anything that's happening in your life. That 100% of the stress and pressure that you're feeling are made up of thought in the moment. And that's, I say that not because of Amy, but because that's the science of it. That's how we work.
Yeah, it's in the art of allowing.
Well,
right? I'm allowing it.
I don't know. Like, I don't know how in control we really are. Like, I, you know, maybe at some level that's true, but I don't know how, as an act of will, to stop thinking one thing and start thinking another. I do know that if I'm hitting myself in the face and it hurts, I can stop hitting myself in the face. Right? If I'm thinking really scary thoughts and they're scaring me, I can kind of distract myself from them and think something else. I don't know what else I'll think, but anything's going to be better than that.
Yeah.
And here's the thing about the yoga and meditation. I'm not against them, obviously. But when you're not continually stressing and pressuring and scaring yourself, you don't need to do so much to relax.
Mm.
Like, relaxation is actually the default. And so when we don't wind ourselves up so much, we don't need to find extra time to calm ourselves back down.
Oh, okay.
So in a funny way, what I'm saying is how would it be if it was even easier, if there was even less to do than it feels like there is to do, not more?
It would feel better. It would feel more at peace.
Right.
So I would feel more at peace.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the direction I'm pointing you.
Okay, so I can take my time.
Yeah.
More or less.
Yeah, and you can let thought and life unfold instead of thinking that it's your job to force them to go where you want them to go now.
Yeah. Okay, that's what I need to do.
All right, Amy. So listen, I'm gonna put you onto hold so you can give your details to the guys in the studio and they will get you out a copy of The Inside Out Revolution.
Okay, thank you.
And feel free to phone back in anytime. So, you know, if you're listening along and you're going, well, now what was the homework? What is she supposed to do? What is she supposed to not do anything? What Amy does or doesn't do from here? Well, that's just going to be part of the art of living for her. I can't tell her what to do, what she should do, what she shouldn't do. I mean, I could, but it would be my make-believe. It would be me making stuff up. What I was pointing to was some stuff that's capital T true. That is as true for you as it is for Amy, as it is for me, regardless of your circumstances, Amy's circumstances, my circumstances. We feel thought. It's how we work. We experience thought. But who we are isn't so much a person as a capacity. Isn't so much a little ego self. It's an infinite essence. We're made of life. We're made of aliveness. We're made of love. We're made of God. There's a, what was Byron Katie's book? 1,000 Words for Joy. Right? There's 1,000 different ways we can talk about it. But who we are underneath it all, the deepest part of ourselves, us before our personality formed, us before our circumstances, us beyond our psychology. Well, that can handle life with ease and grace because that is life, because it is made of the same stuff as life. But when little Michael, little you, little Amy, try to take on the world seems like a big and scary place, and we seem very little in relation to it. It would be like a wave being afraid of the ocean, because the ocean is so much bigger than it. Not seeing that it's made of ocean. So where's the science? The science is in who we are. The science is in how the mind works, how experience works. Where's the art? In how you live your life. Now, you're always going to live your life in accordance with how it looks to you like it works. When it looks to you like you're a little person dealing with a lot of crap, then you'll do whatever you know to do to deal with a lot of crap as a little person. But when you start to see how how big you are, how vast you are. There's a wonderful quote from the poem Walt Whitman, the poet Walt Whitman, when he said, "Do I contradict myself? Very well, then, I contradict myself. I am vast. I contain multitudes." Well, that's you. You are vast. You contain multitudes. And within that vastness, there are multitudinous thoughts and experiences that you're having all day, every day. And when you see them for what they are, you ride them like a horse, like a wave, like a skateboard. And when they don't look like they're coming through you, from you, they look like they're coming at you, well, you duck as best you can, and you catch them as best you can, and you do your best. That's the art of living. It's just that the art of living is a lot easier when you remember who you are. Like, I remember I used to, I worked many years ago in London in a New Age bookshop called The Mystic Trader. It was owned by Stuart Wilde, who used to be with Hay House. I mean, he would still be with Hay House. He died, unfortunately. But that bookshop was my sort of introduction to, all things esoteric. And there were a set of cards, like angel cards, that we used to sell there. And they were from a channeled entity known as Old Chinese. And there was one card that I so loved that I swiped it from the store. Sorry, Ian. And I used to carry it in my wallet, and I had it in my wallet for many years. And it said this: "Everything is possible, providing that you remember your God." Everything is possible, providing you remember your God. Now, does that mean that Michael can get everything he wants and you can get everything you want? Well, no, because Michael isn't God. Sid Banks, the theosopher, used to say, "God I am, but I am not God." In other words, it's not like you're Zeus, right? You're the big guy. You're of the very energy at the heart of life. You are the heartbeat of the universe made manifest in form. But ironically, that's no big deal, because so is everybody else. So I sometimes talk about it in terms of the ordinary and the extraordinary. At an individual level, there's an extraordinary and an extraordinariness to who we are. But when you look at it globally, it's the most ordinary thing in the world. So it's like having a baby, right? For almost everyone I know, male, female, or otherwise, that moment of birth, of having a baby, it wakes something up in you. It wakes up another level of love. It is the most special thing in your life. You will always remember it. And yet, what could be more ordinary than having babies? People do it every day. You don't need education. You don't need much of anything. You know, a penis and a vagina are helpful, but even that, they're not strictly necessary. So isn't it interesting that something so ordinary, something so commonplace, something so accessible to everyone is the most special thing that we have? Well, that's, to my mind, also true in our relationship to the infinite, to the divine, to God, to spirit. What could be more ordinary than being God? Because we all are. We're all made of the same stuff. And yet, is there anything more special in your life than your relationship with Spirit? Than your actual sense of that which is alive in you? Is there anything more miraculous than the electricity of life animating you? And yet, is there anything more ordinary? Is there anything more commonplace? Is there anything more miraculous than a force that we'll call gravity, that keeps us from flying off into space, that causes, you know, my coffee cup to not levitate, and if I drop it, to fall? I mean, that's a freaking miracle, but it's an ordinary miracle. It's a miracle that we all can experience all day long. The problem is, because it's such an ordinary miracle, we lose sight of its miraculousness. The problem is because we're so used to being alive, we lose sight of the miracle of life. We're so used to being able to navigate 95% of our lives without even thinking about it, that we tend to miss the miracle of that inner wisdom, of that inner guidance that lets us live 95% of our lives without even having to think about them. And we focus instead on the 5% where we have to think about it and we have decisions to make. And well, all that is, all decisions are, our way of describing when we've fallen out of the flow of that wisdom and we've kind of fallen up into our heads and we think we need to think our way through things. I did a course years ago called Extraordinary Golf. I can't remember right now the name of the teacher, but he used to be Werner Erhard's golf teacher. Werner Erhard, the man who created Est and still leads some of the most fascinating leadership seminars around the world. And I remember one exercise in particular from this program where they would put the ball on the lip of the cup, right on the edge, and you'd go up and tap it in. And they'd said, now the entire tournament is on the line. You know, this is the Masters and you're ahead of Tiger Woods and everybody else. And, you know, this is the putt for the win. But, you know, the putt's right there. You walk up and you hit it. And then they would move it a couple inches away and you'd walk up and you'd hit it in. And what they were doing, they'd keep moving the ball further and further away from the hole until the moment came where you stopped to think about it. Because it's like, ooh, now I got to think about it. Well, that's kind of how decisions work, right? Most of the time, we don't have to think about it. Most of the things you do, how you're sitting, what you're going to say next if you're in the flow of conversation, what you know, how you're going to manage driving, you know, most of that stuff you don't have to think about. All right. You just walk up and hit the ball in the cup. But there's a certain level of thing where you suddenly get involved, where you suddenly go, no, I've got to step in now. This is a 7-foot putt. I can't just step up there and hit it. I need to think about it. And if you play golf, you'll know that that's where your game falls apart. But whether or not you play golf, just a metaphor for how we work. We do really well when we let thought flow. We have a responsive real-time intelligence in us that comes through exactly when we need it, gives us exactly what we need exactly when we need it. We just don't trust it. So we kind of go, well, that's great, but now I need to step in. Now, you know, thanks God, I'll take it from here. Well, have you noticed things don't flow as well when you're trying to make them happen as when you let life come through you, you let wisdom come through you, you let common sense come to mind? Like, I don't know if this is as common as it used to be, but I remember when I first got GPS on a car, didn't trust it. So I still had my, it was actually in England, so I had my A to Z, But when I came to America, I had a Thomas guide, you know, so I would have the GPS, but then I'd check it with the map. But after a time, I got used to following GPS. I stopped also carrying along maps. I stopped double-checking and cross-checking and printing off directions before getting in the car just in case the GPS didn't work. I learned that I really can rely on the GPS. And the GPS is great because even if I ignore it or don't hear it or mishear it, it will just recalculate and it will give me the new best turn to take, direction to go in, exactly when I need it. So part of the art of living is affected by to what extent do we recognize there's a GPS, that there's a real-time responsive intelligence, because we will simply live differently if we know that, to the extent that we know that, if we rely on that, to the extent that we rely on that, then we would live if we thought we needed maps, better and better maps that we can navigate and we can plot a route and we can work out. Now, I get that's fun sometimes. I'm not saying orienteering's a bad idea. I'm just saying you don't need to rely on that. There is something in you that's already got you. There is something in us that's got our back. And the more we rely on it, the more reliable we see it to be. So if you want to get in for a bit of coaching or conversation, numbers to call, 866-254-1579. Toll free in the United States and Canada. Outside the U.S. and Canada, 001-760-918-4300. So if a lot of what I've been talking about so far is the science, like how life works, how the mind works, what we're made of, well, what about the art of living? Like, why does a better grasp of science help you with art? Well, the reason that it does is because we all do what seems like a good idea at the time. Like, we all do what makes sense to us given the thinking we have that looks real to us. So if I think I live in a world, in a dog-eat-dog world, then my art of living is going to be what makes sense in that world. So I'm, you know, going to seek to eat or be and avoid being eaten. Right? If I live in an abundant universe, similarly, there are certain things that are going to make sense to me in an abundant universe that wouldn't make sense if it wasn't an abundant universe. If I live in a world where if it's to be, it's up to me, then I got to work on me a lot. And if I live in a world where I'm completely guided by God's grace, well, that's a pretty relaxing world to give in. Now, I'm not suggesting you make one up and go with that. I'm simply pointing to how you live is a product of the world you think you live in. And if you can see the difference between the world you think you live in and the world beyond thought, that's just going to change how you live. Let's go to New York City and talk to Jamel. Hey, Jamel, welcome to the show. What are we going to talk about today?
Hey, Michael. I just got in from outside this wonderful New York City, and hopefully you're having a good day.
I am indeed.
Well, I have a situation. I think I called in not too long ago. My mom, who I was caring for a while, she had passed away suddenly a couple of weeks ago. And I was in the process of talking with the doctors about, you know, future medical procedures and things that we wanted to do. When I went out to get some air, I went to talk to a friend who I've been seeing for a couple of months, and the relationship has not been very good. And it just so happened that time when I went to see this person, that was the time, unfortunately, my mother had passed away. And I was just with them in that moment. And my question is, how do you, in my brain, my fear is, and I can put it that way, I'm trying to make this friendship as, I guess I'm trying to make it to something that's not. I don't want it, I don't want in my brain to say, well, I was with somebody who, you know, maybe it's not that nice, maybe it's not that kind. I'm going to work as hard as I can to make sure this relationship or this friendship is significant, because I don't want in my story that I was with this person the moment my mom passed away. I want it to turn into something beautiful. But I'm not sure that's what's going to happen. And I'm just sort of struggling with this months later, how to, I don't know, close a chapter or see them for who they are and not see them for who I want them to be, basically. And it's very complicated.
Oh, okay, so let me see if I can understand this. And first off, I'm sorry about your mom. I just want to say that. Now,
you know what?
Yeah,
I was going to say thank you for saying that, because actually, this was a long time ago, and I'll never forget it. When my mother first had a problem, and it was three strokes in one day, she went to the hospital. This was maybe 8 years or something ago. I came back from the hospital at that time, too, getting a breather from the medical situation. I called into Hay House because she had it way early in the morning, and I came home. It's 3-something here in New York City. I came home. You were on like you are now, and I called in, and you gave me wonderful advice and meditation about how to go back to the hospital and not be overwhelmed by the thing. So this whole, everything I've been going through from that point, I've always called in and every now and then, and you've always given me wonderful advice. And so this is sort of something that now that that chapter is over, I'm calling in again because of sort of a weird thing that happened the day that she passed away. You know?
Yeah, so let me ask about that. So that's wonderful, yeah. Jamel. Let me ask about that. Now, are you saying that you think in some way, because you were with this person when your mom died, that you can't have a clean relationship with this person going forward?
I think I am, yes. I think, well, not clean. I can't see them. Okay, what they do, what anybody else would do, what they do, I wouldn't tolerate it. I would just be like, okay, bye, see you later. This is not going to work out. And my brain, I'm like, oh, my gosh. Okay, please, dear God, don't tell me I made the biggest mistake of my life when something this significant happened. I was with this person when something like this happened. Okay, they have to be wonderful. They have to be great. I have to look hard, work harder, and see things. And just, I don't know, just to keep doing work until I can see something wonderful in them. Because what anybody else would do, the things they do, I would be like, that they would have been gone months ago.
And okay, so I know that you've listened to the show enough that I'm going to at least assume that I can say some things and that you'll hear them the way they're meant.
Okay.
To me, your relationship with this person being impacted by the fact that you're with them when your mom died is like saying, you know, I was parked by a fire hydrant when I heard that my mom died. And ever since then, I just can't abide fire hydrants. Now, that could happen, right? You know, I'm sure there are people who something like that has happened to, but you'd kind of know it's nothing to do with the fire hydrant. That you just, that's just where you happen to be at the time.
Okay.
Right. You wouldn't blame the fire hydrant.
No. I think what happened to me is I blame myself. I think that when I'm coming hard on myself saying,
you shouldn't have been with this particular fire hydrant when your mom died.
Yes.
You should have been with a more compassionate fire hydrant.
Amen. Thank you. I've been able to my brain. Thank you. Yes. That's what. And I'm. You know what I'm doing? I'm trying to make them into a compassionate fire hydrant.
Right.
So that way
yeah. And unfortunately, even if they wanted to be, a fire hydrant's just a fire hydrant.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Right. So now separate that out. Let's put that to one side, okay? Because I think you've seen that. That's just not going to have the same weight going forward.
Mm-hmm.
Now, why, in your mind, do you keep hanging out with somebody that you keep questioning why you're hanging out with them?
In my mind, I think that In my mind, I'm saying to myself, there has to be something fantastic with them that, I don't feel like I want to be, I don't want my brain to say I was with a monster, which they're not. So I was a monster. I allowed myself to be around a monster while my mom passed. So they have, something has to be in there that's going to turn out beautiful. It's going to be like, you know, I was with a person who actually was compassionate, you know, in the long haul, but.
I just want to check this because maybe I'm misunderstanding. So you're wanting to stay with them because they were the fire hydrant you were with when your mom died.
That's right. Yes, absolutely. I do. Or at least I think I should probably not do that because, you know, I don't think they are compassionate. But that's exactly right. The moment that I heard I was with them and I was like, you know, maybe in 10 years, I don't want to go, well, who was that person I was with? But I that's what I'm calling. But yeah.
Well, okay. Now, can you see how, and it's really okay if you can't, but can you see just how many levels of made up that is? That it's going to matter if you happen to have a thought 10 years from now about who you were with when your mom died, that could be in any way be a justification for doing anything now? Because you might think something 10 years from now?
Oh, okay. No, you're right. So I'll go a little deeper. You're right about that. I didn't think about that, about 10 years and what does it mean? I think that in my family, and I can keep, you know, harboring on my family, people, well, you know, you probably dealt with some clients. People have this thing called regret, and sometimes it takes them down. In my family, with alcohol and other things, and in my brain, I'm like, well, I don't really have that much in my life, but maybe this could be a doorway, and let me make sure this don't turn into a regret. So, but you're right. If it's 10 years from later, I'm so definitely afraid that.
Yeah. So here's the fun thing, Jamal. That. Because most people, part of their art of living involves this particular one, is doing things now to avoid feeling things later.
Mm-hmm.
And that just makes total sense if our feelings had something to do with what we do or don't do, and makes no sense at all in a world where we feel thought in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Which means in any given moment, I could feel regret without having done anything that... Mm-hmm. I would do differently, or I can do all sorts of things that if I had a do-over, I wouldn't do and not feel regret at all.
Mm-hmm.
Because regret is nothing to do with what you do or don't do. It's just, it's a particular regretful thought. And you may feel regret, but that would be no big deal, because then after you feel regret, you'll feel curiosity. And after you feel curiosity, you'll feel hunger. And after you feel hunger, you'll feel anger. And after you feel anger, you'll feel fear. And after you feel fear, you'll feel laughter. Like, we feel. We're alive. That's what we do. There's no particular feeling we're not supposed to pass through or allow to pass through us.
Okay, that's opening the door for me. That really is, because I did not know how to tackle it at all. And what you said about the 10-year thing, that's big. And also about regret, you know, even if I do feel it, you know, oh, I was in this time with this person who wasn't that quality. That could be a regret, but it will pass. It got an action in closing. How do you now allow yourself to get into a cycle that stays stuck in one emotion or thought?
Well, yeah, no, I think I understand the question. See, you say that as though the default would be to get stuck in a cycle.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And I'm going to suggest that actually the design, the default in terms of how we're made, is for fresh thought to come. So if we're not spinning a thought around in our head, if we're not worrying a thought like a bead on a rosary, then fresh thought will come. That's how the mind works. So it's less a case of how do I avoid worrying,
mm-hmm,
than just how do I open myself up to fresh thought?
Okay. Fresh. Oh, wow. Thank you. I like that. Thank you very much. I like that. That makes me feel a little, no matter what happens, you can feel it, but then, you know, I'm keep myself open to, you know, fresh thoughts,
yeah,
other than regret or whatever. Yeah. Thank you.
Beautiful, Jamal. Always nice to hear from you, my friend.
Thank you very much. You too. Thank you.
Bye. You know, again, what we do really does make sense in the world that we think we live in. Right? And if I live in a world where it really looks to me like regret is scary and can hurt me and must be avoided, well, of course, I'll look for ways to avoid regret. And if I think regret is caused by certain behaviors, then I'll monitor my behavior very closely. But if I see regret as one of the infinite numbers of feelings that can pass through me in any moment, then it's not scary. It's just a feeling. It doesn't have more weight or meaning than other feelings. It's not telling me about how messed up my life is or my life was. It's the feeling of a certain thought, certain kind of thought. And who we are is so far beyond that. Right, I was reading, I can't remember what it's called, but it's based on Eckhart, it's an Eckhart Tolle thing based on A New Earth. And the very first line is about what a tiny, tiny aspect of consciousness thought is. I mean, he doesn't say this, but what I saw in reading it was like less than 1% of our consciousness is made up of thought. And yet we spend 99% of our time looking at that. Looking at, well, okay, this thought, but maybe I could have that thought, or this experience, but I want that experience, or this feeling, but I want that feeling. And that's all happening in that little less than 1% of who you are. Now, I'm not saying it's not happening. But how would life be different if you started paying more attention to the 99.9% of pure possibility, pure openness, pure love, pure consciousness, uncontaminated by personal thinking? And less time worrying about the 0.01%. I keep changing the percentage, but like that very small fraction of reality that's made up of our personal thinking. And my guess is you would experience a lot more spaciousness, a lot more freedom, a lot more perspective and humor, a lot more love, a lot more patience, a lot more beauty, a lot more quiet, a lot more stillness. A lot more silence. And a lot more truth. The thought machine's not going to switch off. And sometimes it's great. Because it lets us create cool stuff. And it brings new things to mind. But it isn't who we are. And our experience of thought is a momentary thing. It's transitory. It's here and then it's gone. So to fear the shape a cloud might take 10 years from now, to do anything to try and avoid weather that might happen in 3 weeks, makes no sense. And to try to live our lives to avoid future experiences or feelings, well, that doesn't make much sense either. So I hope that helps you with your art of living. Be back next week in the new show. If you like this stuff, check out michaelneal.org. Until next time, have fun, learn heaps, and I'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye for now.